Very much for that interesting topic. And as you can see, cryptographic boundaries are always debatable and questionable, and there's more to learn than the 25-30 minutes that we can devote right now. So at this point, I'm going to introduce you to another track chair, who's my right-hand man, Jonathan Smith from Sydneycom. He and I are going to share the load of the track, and Jonathan will introduce the next speaker, and then we'll have lunch break after that. Jonathan.
Okay. Okay. One question. So, our next speaker is going to be talking to us about certification of quantum cryptographic network security devices, which is definitely an interesting upcoming field that FIPS hasn't dealt with yet, but I'm sure we're all going to be needing to deal with in the future. So what we have here is John Wall-Rabenstein. I completely read off the wrong thing. Yes, sorry, Nino Wallen. I was reading off the wrong line here. Dr. Wallen, he joined with the Battelle Memorial Institute as a principal research scientist for quantum technologies back in 2014. Currently, he's working on developing the first commercial quantum key distribution system that does comply with FIPS 140-2, so it'll be interesting to hear how you did that. And you've got over 10 years of research and development experience in quantum optics and quantum communications. You have a diploma degree in physics from the University of Potsdam and a PhD degree in physics from the University of Geneva. So, thank you.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much and welcome everybody to this topic, quantum cryptography and certification. So we have not yet achieved the certification of quantum key distribution, so it's probably the title should be toward certification of quantum cryptographic network security devices. But I would like to share a little bit the insights and approaches we have been taking. We have heard a couple of times this morning about, or heard the statement that we would not attack the algorithm, we would rather attack the system. As a physicist who has no idea I would now attack actually the system of normal cryptographic devices. My simplest approach would actually be to record everything that is transmitted, especially those data which has certain requirement for long-term security, and then wait till my quantum computer is ready and decrypt all this data, which is a very serious threat, and people who don't believe that quantum computers will come, I would tell they will come. So, and one solution against this threat is quantum key distribution or quantum cryptography. There will be another session at the end of this week on Friday morning, which goes deeper in quantum computing, the threats, and also other post-quantum security solutions. So my topic is today about quantum cryptography in networks and how we can make them compliant with FIPS. So a little bit of physics. I know I heard last year the statement that the people in this community don't want to deal with the hardware layer, the physical layer of the system, which I completely appreciate, but I thought it might be interesting and actually it's necessary to understand a little bit of what's going on with quantum key distribution. So the basis of quantum key distribution is that it allows to continuously expand an initially shared secret between locations, remote locations. We call them Alice and Bob, transmitter and receiver, in a way that allows us to measure the maximum amount of information that could have potentially leaked to an eavesdropper. And by eavesdropper, we mean an arbitrarily powerful eavesdropper, an eavesdropper who can exploit all the attacks that are allowed by physics, information theory, quantum information theory, without any limits. And once we have measured this amount of information that was potentially leaked to an eavesdropper, there are then certain methods applied at the end which can get rid of this leaked information. So the idea dates back to the beginning of the 80s. Bennett and Brassard, two physicists and an information theorist, both met at the Baltic Sea, I think, swimming and discussed a little bit information security. And when they reached the beach again, they came up with this idea, which is based actually on fundamental principles. The first one, the no cloning theory of physics, which means that if we encode this information in quantum states, an eavesdropper cannot simply do a copy of the states and by this and copy the information. It is fundamentally forbidden. And the second one is Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which means or entails that whenever somebody tries to measure my quantum state, which is unknown a priori to him, he will necessarily perturbate this quantum state. And this perturbation we can detect, measure, and quantify how much information was leaked to this eavesdropper. And so the aim of this is that we can now distribute a shared secret between remote locations, as I said, in a way that we are able to detect the eavesdropper and quantify this information leakage. To illustrate this a little bit, I draw here a picture of actually a very simple quantum key distribution protocol, and still at least simple to explain. And it's actually the one that we are using in our quantum key distribution system, which is called the coherent one-way or COW-QKD protocol. So again, don't listen if you're not interested in the physical layer for everybody else. We start here with a random number generator, which is a quantum random number generator. If you're interested in this technology, we have actually, Whitewood has a booth in the exhibition hall presenting their neat technology of quantum randomness generation. We use here a different one, which is manufactured by ID Quantique, a Swiss company, and which was recently, last year, actually certified with the European AIS 20/31 security certification standard. So we use this as our primary source, then have a laser, similar laser that is used in modern telecommunication systems, and a modulator which now encodes information in such a way that we always send a pulse in either this timing, which denotes bit 0, or in the inverse timing, which denotes the bit 1. And so all the receiver would have to do is to detect at which time does he get a detection if those two are synchronized. If it's in this timing, he knows it was a bit 1, and this timing a bit 0. Very easy. So where does the quantum security come in? Well, we have here an attenuator. So by this, actually, in each of those timings, we have only one single photon, the smallest entity of or quantity of light that we can send over the fiber. And we also send a third state, which we call here the decoy state, which is actually the quantum superposition. Now, if you look, it's actually a bit 0 plus a bit 1 in a quantum way that they have a certain relation, coherence, we call it, between those two time bins. And so Alice also sends this from time to time. And well, if Bob now would detect this quantum state in this detector, he cannot tell whether it's a bit 0 or a bit 1, because he could get a detection either of those two time bins. So in this case, it would be useless. But he can use the second detector. And what happens there is actually that the first time bin can now take this long arm in this, like, interferometer, it's called, this physical device, and the second time bin can take the short arm, and then those two would arrive at this half semi-transparent mirror at the very exact time, and magic happens in such a way that those photons should then always leave this interferometer in this empty arm here and never produce a click here. And the only way that you can get a click in this detector here is because somebody tried to measure this quantum state. And this is based back with this perturbation of quantum state which I mentioned earlier. And this now quantifies us how often an eavesdropper tried to measure our quantum state. And so, well, this step we actually don't have to discuss too much. I just want to explain a little bit deeper why it is now secure illustrated. The first thing is a simple tapping attack on a fiber. I could go in a shop, buy for $100 a tapping device which passively listens on your fiber, and then I can copy all this data. Simply doesn't work, because if I tap on this fiber, this photon, either I detect it, then Bob cannot detect it, or Bob detects it, then I cannot detect it. So there's already a certain amount of security involved. And the second thing is now related to this security measure here. If I now want to know, is this photon in this time bin or in this time bin, and I measure this, I necessarily destroy this magic quantum correlation between those two pulses. They will no longer interfere here, and I can detect it. This is in basic words how quantum key distribution works, this protocol. Every QKD protocol needs also another channel, a conventional communication channel, now highlighted in red, where we do, first of all, an error correction scheme. Like in any other communication scheme, there might be errors due to detection or because an eavesdropper interfered. We have to get rid of them. We have then to do parameter estimation, meaning measure how many errors we have now, how many detections we have in this detector there, and then perform this privacy amplification where this initially raw quantum key gets much shorter in a way that the information that was potentially leaked out to an eavesdropper gets now completely reduced. And this is essentially a hash function where we use tuplet hashing, which has a nice characteristic that it's information theoretically provably secure. And this would be actually a nice comment for NIST, to NIST from my side. It would be great for the quantum communication community if those kind of hashing algorithms could be included in the allowed approved functions in FIPS, because so far they are not, and they are secure. They are rigorous proofs. And similar thing is for the authentication scheme that we need in order to authenticate this communication channel. We use a Bigman-Carter scheme, again, has a very high provably secure security and is not in the catalog of approved functions. At the very end, actually, the nice characteristic of QKD is that you can say, well, my system is secure with this quantified parameter epsilon, we call it the security parameter, which is related to now the probability that if the most powerful eavesdropper performs an attack in, let's say, 1,000 years when he has his full capable quantum memories, whatever resources he wants, the probability that something went wrong and that he could have gotten a bit of information, secret information, is related to this epsilon parameter. So now every QKD system actually can be labeled with this very rigorous quantity that specifies its security. So there are nice advantages. This has a very strong forward security QKD, provably security based on fundamental principles, and actually it produces high key rates. Modern QKD systems operate or generate key rates in the megabit per second rate, which is probably quite difficult to achieve as far as I know the technology today with conventional methods, megabits per second. So at least one has to do significant effort. But there are limitations. So the one thing is that intrinsically it is a point-to-point system from Alice to Bob. There are ways to somehow share this as multiple, but QKD itself a priori is a point-to-point technology, and it has a distance limitation because we send single photons, they get absorbed in the fiber, and so the current technologies are limited, or the record is actually 300 kilometers, and commercial system operate in the order of 100 kilometers per second. And the last one is there is no security certification standard yet. So security standards are actually important. The security proofs are rigorous, and every mathematician could say, okay, this is correct and this is correct. But similar to what has been said before in the other sessions, the implementation has to be secure as well. If there are side channels or other means, the whole security concept breaks down. So there are a few assumptions, for example, that the random number generator is really random, that the eavesdropper has no physical access inside the QKD system itself, that there are no side channels, in other words, and that there is a secure authentication scheme between Alice and Bob. I want to stress with this fourth point, whenever we talk about quantum hacking, we mean the attack on the device implementation, not on the principle, which is, again, a very big difference to, for example, conventional methods, where the principle itself is not known to be secure or how secure it is. And so this, from time to time, we have those messages popping up like quantum key distribution has been broken. No. The device has been attacked. There has been found a loophole in the implementation. They can be fixed, but the principle itself stays secure. And there's actually a very strong active research area in this field. I mentioned as one attack that becomes ineffective due to this fundamental principle, which is this fiber tapping, passive listening. Similar man-in-the-middle attack where an eavesdropper wants to detect a photon and then regenerates the same quantum state runs into the problem because, well, he could detect the photon, going back to this scheme I presented in the first time in, but he doesn't know whether it was this two time in state, no. And then he would break the coherence, we would get the detection. This scheme is completely ruled out even with more sophisticated attacks. Then other practical attacks, and they have been demonstrated even on commercial systems, are side channel attacks. So an easy example is if you imagine the different states are generated by different lasers, for example, or for other reasons have a different temporal shape or vice versa, different spectrum. An eavesdropper could now measure the time when he gets a detection without actually destroying this quantum information. And this is the quantum side channel attack, and this has been demonstrated. And the best way is, first of all, to make sure that they all look the very same. And the second nice thing is actually, even if they don't look exactly the same, one can now, once one has characterized the components, characterize the difference between them and feed it back into the security proofs, which means that we have to do a stronger privacy amplification, generating a shorter key at the very end, but taking into account these differences in the in the overlaps. A strong attack was actually demonstrated roughly 7-8 years ago, the detector control attack, which is actually where those statements originate from, where a smart guy in Waterloo here, Ontario, had an idea to send a lot of light on those single photon detectors, and by this taking over control over the receiver device and actually ruling, disabling all these quantum features that were there. This has been studied, has been now circumvented by certain kind of measures, and similar, the other attacks have been shown, but there are always like somehow ways to either implement countermeasures or to incorporate the consequences into the security proofs and then regulating this privacy amplification level. So now, in order actually to, when I say that this has to be characterized and feedback fed back into the security proofs, so this is actually where the certification comes into play. There is a strong effort going on in Europe, led by the ETSI, the European Standardization Institute, which has a program, and there were a lot of other meteorological institutes involved, like in England, in Germany, in Italy, the SI, Standard Unit Institute. All those like looking into the devices, looking into methods, and agreeing onto methods, how quantum components can be measured, characterized, what parameters have to be determined, and how those parameters should be considered in the security proofs in order to create a big picture of how quantum devices, quantum communication devices, can be certified. So the methods, algorithms, components. And currently it has 24 members from academia and industry all around the world, and whoever is interested is welcome. There's a second initiative actually initiated by Battelle and ID Quantique within this Cloud Security Alliance. We have set up a quantum safe working group, which not only looks on quantum key distribution and related technologies, but also quantum, post-quantum algorithm solutions against the quantum computer threat. And this is a little bit more like the forum we have seen this morning, where we have regular meetings, exchange ideas, go to conferences, and agree on making those ideas, moving those ideas forward. So now coming to FIPS. The system Battelle is implementing is actually, we aim for compliance with the FIPS 140-2 standard. Most of the, and I assume everybody who has dealt with FIPS knows those 11 areas of requirements everybody has to go through several times. Most of them are actually not so different, whether it's now a quantum communication system, quantum cryptography system, or a standard system. What made us most headache was the cryptographic key management and the physical security. Cryptographic key management, because the idea of having a physical layer in the system which brings the security is nothing FIPS considered by itself. It does not look really on the physical communication layer. No, it does everything what is above. And the physical security is simply because we have certain requirements on the components. The detectors have to be cooled down. There has to be a high degree of temperature stability in the system. How can we bring this requirements into agreement with the physical enclosure requirements imposed by FIPS? So how can we now, first of all, fit QKD into the FIPS strategy? The first probably obvious idea would be, well, if I look into one of the devices, let's say Alice here, I take my quantum key, generate in parallel a FIPS-approved key by a approved method, which is actually shared by my receiver station on the other hand, and then feed those two as a seed in an approved deterministic random number generator. And the outcome would be an approved, FIPS-approved key that I can then feed to user devices. Would work. The problem is that from my point of view, the information theoretical security that we have from the quantum key would be lost due to this random number generator. So this is something we would like to avoid. And it took us a while, well, it took me a while in order to dig through all those FIPS paragraphs until I was really, really happy that I saw, when I saw that FIPS allows a XOR operation. Sounds simple, but again, I had to find it. And the approach is similar, but now we use a quantum key, another FIPS-approved or FIPS-generated or generated key, which is approved by FIPS. Potentially enlarge this initial key by an approved random number generator, but the important thing now is that we mix this with a bitwise XOR. So I am happy because the security from my point of view comes from the quantum key. FIPS is happy because the security from their point of view comes from this FIPS-approved key. And in the end, the XOR guarantee that actually the strongest security prevails. And then now we can use the output here and feed it to our external applications. And because of this XOR, the information theoretical security of the QKD is maintained. And this is actually what we do in our system. Here's a sketch of how the system looks like, or, well, it's a sketch, but it actually looks like this. So we have this hard metal enclosure around our quantum blade, we call it. Hard metal in order to prevent any tampering with the device. We have switches in order to prevent opening without being noticed. And whenever it's opened, actually the keys get zeroized as it should be according to FIPS. And the hard metal enclosure actually also serves as a heat dissipation. I told you that the detectors, etc., dissipate heat, have to be cooled down, and all this happens actually through this hard metal enclosure. And if you look inside, you see it's a small blade. It actually has this size. It's smaller than this laptop. We have the optics here on the bottom for all the quantum channel. Then we have here the part which does a lot of the FIPS-approved cryptographic methods and the XOR, etc. We have here the small quantum random number generator approved by this AIS standard. Here are the single photon detectors. The keys that are delivered by the quantum key engine are stored in a secure memory. And as soon as we detect any tamper, and they are stored there in an encrypted way, and so as soon as we detect any tamper, we simply delete the encryption key of the secure memory and all the keys get nullified and zeroized. And in the front panel, again, those was more or less the easy part, like that all the critical security parameters and key entries and outputs are separated logically and physically. So I mentioned this distance and point-to-point limitation of QKD, and with our development, we actually also want to circumvent those. And there, the current approach we are taking is this trusted repeater network. There's a big goal in the physics community to do this on a whole quantum basis based on quantum repeaters, and I don't want to go into details on this. It might become reality in 5 to 10 years, but there are problems with those quantum repeaters and quantum memories. So what we are doing is this quantum trusted repeater network. We have an Alice and a Bob. And in this trusted repeater, we simply detect our quantum state, regenerate a new key with this Alice, send it to Bob, and by this a key can hop from node to node. And it doesn't have to be a simple chain like it's here. It can be any complicated network topology, but it requires trust in those nodes that an eavesdropper cannot somehow spy on this intermediate link between those two devices. More precisely, we relax those trust assumptions a little bit in our design. And this is now how this quantum relay and user key hopping would work, or works. This is the user key that I eventually want to share with another node in the network. Again, it's a simple chain network, but it could be any more complicated network topology. So we have here our quantum key distribution part that generates symmetric quantum keys between those two nodes. But additionally, we use a standard FIPS-approved public key transport scheme between the initiating node and the final end node. And we first do an encryption with this yellow lock here from the public key on my user key, and then encrypt this once encrypted one with my quantum key that then hops to the first node, gets decrypted, sent over, gets re-encrypted with the next quantum key until it reaches its final node. So this first encryption step is actually done, first of all, to be compliant with FIPS, because the quantum encryption itself is not approved, so we have this additional layer. And secondly, it now is not directly visible, the user key is not directly visible to this intermediate node. So there is another level of protection in order to relax those trust requirements at the intermediate nodes. And the whole blade is implemented, as I showed before, in this small, or the engine is implemented, this small ATKA blade, where we can take such a rack and then configure our node with a lot of several quantum key distribution system as it is required in order to realize our topology in the network. And final slide. This is now listing all the FIPS approved method, how this would look like for those who are more familiar with those. We would have here our FIPS approved key transport scheme between two neighboring nodes, our quantum key engine, and this key generation is actually this XOR that I mentioned before. So this is now where our approved key gets generated. We have then here this end-to-end node public key based key transport scheme. And the additional wrapper with the quantum keys in this between two neighboring nodes. And all the randomness generated by our approved quantum random number generator. So this I would like to summarize quickly and telling you that I hope I have given you a little bit insight why me and a lot of my colleagues believe that quantum key distribution is a very good way in order to provide highly secure symmetric keys between remote locations with a very strong forward security that is resilient against future attacks, even including quantum computational attacks. That QKD can indeed be fit into the FIPS 140-2 requirements, and that actually the QKD network that we have been developing and that are actually evolving all around the world provide a very good way in order to circumvent this point-to-point and distance limitation. So with this, I would like to thank you for your attention, and I'm happy for your questions. Oh.
Hi, I'm David McGrew, Cisco Systems. And it seems to me like there's an important issue with certification of quantum key distribution devices, because with QKD, your security assumption is in the physical layer, right? There's an assumption that no attacker along the optical fiber can interfere with the physical processes at the sender or receiver in a way that would enable them to get side channel information, right? And that some of the practical attacks you listed were exploiting that kind of thing. So the security evaluation, it seems to me, necessarily needs to consider the physical layer as opposed to, you know, the typical certifications are about digital systems. So I didn't see much of that in the slide. I thought that was, it was good that you mentioned the practical attacks, but I didn't see anything about, you know, certification that would specifically address the security assumptions of the physical channel.
Indeed. So, and FIPS doesn't, right? FIPS does not address the physical layer. And this is, so to, in this FIPS environment, really, with this XOR that we provide there, I mean, we hope to make both sides happy. FIPS and us, because I mean, because it fits into FIPS. But you are completely right. If there would be a side channel, for example, then the quantum key would be insecure. The whole system would still be FIPS secure because we have this other quantum this conventional key, but the quantum layer would be insecure. However, there is, and this is why I mentioned this European approach, which is actually going exactly in this direction. The goal of this approach, I have here the second point, which I didn't read out because it sounds so complicated, but it defines a process, methods, etc., based on current QKD security-proof techniques, where we quantitatively, assess the discrepancy between what we assume in the security proofs and how the real system looks like. We characterize the components, we characterize the implementation, we quantify the differences, what we assume, and this can then all be integrated back, fed back into the security proofs such that indeed, even if there are side channels, they have to be tested and they have to be agreed methods how they are tested, but still can be rendered secure. But not within FIPS, yes.
This is actually getting to the side channel. Any comment, because this is relatively new research and referring to effects work at MIT about cross-modulating lasers to actually non-destructively test the photon, and whether or not the end-to-end security would actually still exist if her method works.
So what was the method you
mentioned? She's cross-modulating lasers, yep, and not destroying the photon. She's doing a non-destructive intercept of the photon.
This is, would be completely fine. You can do, for example, again, what I mentioned here, you can perform a measurement on certain characteristics on the photon without affecting other characteristics. So if translated in what I've done, tried to illustrate here, is one characteristic would be, where is my photon? Is it in the first or the second timing? And the second characteristic would be, what is its spectrum? Those are completely independent,
yeah,
quantum characteristics, and you can change one without the other, but this is...
Her argument is, I was wondering, because she started to say you can non-destructively effectively copy the photon.
No. Well, you. Yes, but you cannot copy a quantum state. This is, and she will. I'm pretty sure if I read your paper, she will not say this.
Her paper, not mine.
Yeah, her paper. Yeah.
Just wondering, because I know she's caused a lot of uproar because she didn't look at it this way. It was a method of doing modulation. And all of a sudden, she's starting. That causality issue may or may not be true. So this is why. That's kind of heavy.
The reason why me and others are so confident about the statements you make about QKD is because those principles like no cloning, we know, we have done experiments and related theories, we know that if those principles wouldn't hold, then, or we know that even future theories, however they might look like, will somehow implement those features and principles. If they wouldn't, the only alternative that exists is that everything around us is completely deterministic, which makes concepts like randomness and cryptography very useless.
I was just asking, because she's causing a bit of a...
Okay, I will read her paper. I'll come back to you later. There was another... Time for another question?
We've got time for a couple more.
Okay.
So the question is about the man in the middle of his head. So I get that you can't bootstrap on the quantum key bit because you say it's prevented by secure authentication, but it seems to me that authentication protocol could be attacked computationally.
Yeah, good point, actually. So the authentication authenticates this conventional communication channel that we need in order to do the error correction, privacy amplification, those procedures, and we must be sure that Alice talks to Bob and to nobody else. And actually what we do is we have our highly secure symmetric quantum keys and we use those for the authentication. So this is why I mentioned this Wigman-Carter authentication scheme, which is information theoretically secure. So there's no long-term computational attack on this, but it requires symmetric keys. So the question that might now come up is, well, for the first QKD round, how do you do the authentication there? And this is why at the very beginning I said it enlarges an initially shared secret. So at the very beginning, Alice and Bob needs to share a short initial key, really short, a few, like a 256-bit, for the first authentication round. But this first, we get typically the QKD keys that we need for authentication is on the order of 1% of the keys we generate. So 99 of the keys that we generate in the first round, we can then use for encryption and take us 1% for the next authentication round and so on. And the security groups take into account this kind of sequential behavior of QKD. So, yeah.
All right. Well, with that fairly thorough answer, I think we're about out of time. So thank you very much for that interesting talk, everyone. And with that, we've reached our lunch break. So make your way out to the atrium. We should.